situations that I am, and so that makes me envious. Well, the particular things he talks about in this chapter, envy and jealousy, ideas that are very similar, and sometimes we use those words interchangeably. There can be slight nuance, slight difference between what they mean. They can be used interchangeably, mean the same thing, but there's some slight distinction that can be there as well. But the other couple of things he talks about is an extreme competitiveness and a controlling attitude. Being extremely competitive, always wanting to win and win at all costs, no matter what it takes, or a controlling attitude that always tries to control things and get its way. He says those can be related to envy and jealousy, but all those ideas are here in Galatians 5 listed as works of the flesh. So in Galatians 5, if we start looking at verse 19, it says, now the works of the flesh are evident. Sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, there's one of the ideas, fits of anger, rivalries, which covers what when he talks about competitiveness or when he talks about a controlling attitude, it falls under that idea of rivalries, dissensions, divisions, envy. There's a third one, even here in Galatians 5, drawing some distinction between jealousy and envy, drunkenness, orgies, and things like these. I warn you, as I warned you before, that those who do such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. And so he names jealousy, he names rivalry, and he names envy. And that rivalry, being a rival with someone else, wanting to beat them, wanting to do better than them in all parts of life and in all times of life, when we develop that kind of rivalry with another person, that's the kind of ideas that he's talking about when he talks about competitiveness or a controlling attitude. So if we look at each one of these individually, we'll talk about envy and jealousy and then kind of define them, look at some of the distinctions between them, and then see how we should look at them biblically. Now we'll talk about the other couple as well. But for envy, he defined it, Jerry Bridges defined it by saying, envy is a painful and oftentimes resentful awareness of an advantage enjoyed by someone else. Someone else has an advantage. They have something that we don't have. They have some type of advantage over us, and we recognize that, and it's painful for us. We don't like it, and very oftentimes there's a resentment over that as well. They might, and that advantage could be different things. They might have more money, have more possessions, have more stuff, and so it, when we think of envy and jealousy, we might often think of being envious of what someone else has. They have a nicer house than us, nicer truck, nicer motorcycle, nicer job, better paying job, or whatever the case might be. We can be envious of those kinds of things, but yeah, we can also be envious of the type of job they have. Or even we work with someone else and they get along better with the boss and the boss seems to favor them, and we can be envious of those kinds of things. And so there's different things that we can be envious of that might then lead to covetousness or lead to other sins as well. Or it might stay in that area of envy and jealousy and resenting them for what they have. And yet Scripture calls this envy sinful. So how do we recognize it in our lives? If envy of others is sinful, what times of life might we be envious of someone else? And Bridges points out a couple situations. He said, well, we might be envious of anybody, of a lot of different things. But he says specifically, very often when we are envious, it's of someone else in a similar position to us. It's not someone who has a position even way greater than ours. It's someone that's in a similar place as us. So he says for himself, the lady he was talking about that got these speaking invitations that he didn't get, he said, well, generally speaking, we were at about the same position in our teaching and writing careers. We were about the same place. He says, there's a lot of writers who are far better than I am who would get a lot of invitations like that. You would expect them to. He says, I know I don't measure up to them. I'm not so much tempted to be envious of them. I'm tempted to be envious of that person who's very similar to me. They're similar to me, and yet they have some advantage that I see. And so he gives other illustrations. It might be someone in a job. We're not envious of the CEO wanting his job, but the person on an equal level with us, the person that's our peer, the person that we work with, but again, gets some type of advantage. That's who we're envious of. A couple other illustrations he uses is in athletics, we might not be envious of the pro athletes, the guys who do the best, but the people on our team, the people in the same competition level as us. Or he also points out, even within a church, a pastor of a smaller and mid-sized church might not be envious of a mega church, but he can be envious of another smaller mid-sized church that seems to be going better than where he's at. Very often we're envious of those who are in a similar position to us. And then it's probably obvious to us, but we're often also envious of the things that are important to us. If we value something, if we want something, often that's what we're envious of. Someone has more money, nicer house, nicer vehicles, whatever the case might be, we want them. That's why it's appealing to us. And not always. We might be envious of someone else that has something we didn't even want. Like he says, he was envious of this lady getting the speaking invitations that he didn't even like to travel and have to do all the stuff required to take them. Sometimes we might be envious there, but we can be envious of the things that are important to us, the things we value. We look and say, well, that person has a nicer house or more land or nicer vehicles than we have. We want that. But yet we might also look at something that is nice but totally not appealing to us. We're not so likely to be envious of that. Like, for me, personally, if someone has a really nice apartment in New York City, it can be the nicest one, it can be the best part of the city, it can be the most expensive one, I'm not going to be envious of it. I don't want to live there. But the things that we care about, the places that we want to go, the things that we want to do, that's very often where we can be envious. And so it can be those possessions, the money, the house, the vehicle, stuff that really isn't going to last, and yet we value it more than we should. We can be envious of those things. Again, we can be envious of the position that someone else has in life. They have a job or we're in competition for them with them to get a promotion and they get the promotion and we don't. Or we're wanting to get promoted and we don't get along with our boss that decides who gets promoted. We don't get along with him as well as somebody else does. We might be envious of those people. But we value that better job. We value getting a promotion or making more money from that better job. Another example that comes to mind is kids or family. We can be envious, caring about our kids, caring about our family, but wanting them to do well. And so we get envious, we get upset when someone else seems to have an advantage over them. And I thought about this, and I've heard different stories. So I looked one up, and the one that I came across, the little tagline by the news article says, "Parents and coaches were unhappy with a call made by a 13-year-old umpire during a youth baseball game, according to the police department. They then stormed the field and began punching each other as the 7-year-old players looked on." Yeah, and you hear stories of that. There's kids' sports, and the parents get mad. The parents get in a fight. The parents start arguing. And here, this one actually ended up in a fist fight. People are actually fighting. Why? Because they have 7-year-old kids playing, and there's a 13-year-old kid as the umpire, and they think he made a bad call. And one parent says, that bad call gave the other team an advantage over my team, over my child. My child is missing out. It's unfair for him because of this seemingly unfair and bad call. And so there's envy that comes out. There's being upset over the advantage that someone else has, but obviously it leads to other sins, doing other things wrong. And so we can be envious in these ways. If we go over to Exodus 20, we might be envious, we might be upset about this seeming advantage that someone else has. But a similar idea is jealousy. And we see this idea of jealousy here in Exodus 20. Jealousy and envy, we use them interchangeably. They have very similar meanings. But if we draw some measure of distinction between them and the way sometimes the Bible is speaking of them, envy is wanting something that someone else has. We don't have it, and we want what they have. Jealousy, very often, is we do have it, but we don't want anybody else to have it. We're jealous of someone else who has the same advantage that we have. And in that term and in that definition, the Bible actually uses jealousy in some senses as a good thing, and yet in some senses as a bad thing. And sometimes the word that is translated as jealous is the word zealous. The idea of being zealous, caring a lot for something, that can be good. If we're zealous for the right thing, that can be good. But yeah, if we're zealous for the wrong thing, then it's sinful. And that's the very similar idea to jealousy, caring a great deal for something. If we care for something that's good, that can be a good thing. And yet if we care for something or go about it in a bad way or a sinful way, then it's a wrong thing. So a good jealousy. God is sometimes described as being a jealous God. We see that here in Exodus in a couple of the Ten Commandments that are given. Exodus 20, starting in verse 3. God says, "You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them." Why not? Why should they not worship any other gods? Why should they not have any other idols? "For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments." God calls himself a jealous God. He cares for and he wants to be the only one with the position of being worshipped. He's telling them, don't worship any other gods. Have no other gods before me that you value or that you worship above me. Don't worship any graven images. Don't worship any idols. I should have the only position of worship in your life. And yet that's a good jealousy because God's the one who truly does deserve that. God is the only true God. No one else is worthy of worship. No one else deserves to be worshipped. And so God is zealous and God is jealous for a good thing. He's jealous to be the only one worshipped because he's the only one who rightfully does deserve that position. He's the only one that does deserve to be worshipped. And so he is right in being jealous over that. And even in the way that God is jealous over that, he's not going to sin in any other way. The other example of a good jealousy that Bridges points out, but one that could, even though it's good, still end up leading to sins, is he says two spouses should be jealous over one another. Jealous of the relationship that they have. That a husband and wife should guard their marriage jealously. That if someone else is trying to pull one spouse away, pull them away from the marriage, pull them into adultery, it's actually a right thing for the other spouse to be jealous of that. He is trying to guard what is rightfully his. He is the only spouse of that other person. He should be jealously guarding that relationship. Now, obviously, because we're sinners, even in a right kind of jealousy, rightly trying to guard our marriage, we might sin in the way we go about it. We might sin in other ways. But to want to protect that relationship is a good type of jealousy. And so there are those good places where jealousy can be. And yet, of course, and typically the way we use the word, we're talking about a sinful jealousy. Actually sinning by being jealous of something. If we go over to 1 Samuel 18... see an example of this. 1 Samuel 18. And when we talk about sinful jealousy, again, it's wanting to have for ourselves what no one else has, but yet a sinful jealousy is pridefully and selfishly wanting us to be the only one to have it, even if someone else rightfully could have it. It's not wrong for them to have it, but we still don't want them to because we pridefully and selfishly want it for ourselves. For God to be jealous, to be a jealous God, to want no one else worshipped as God, is a right thing because no one else deserves that worship. And yet sometimes, very often, when we're jealous over something, we want to be the only one that has it, or we want to have it to a greater degree than someone else, even though they have just as much right to it as we do. Even though they could have it or earn it just as much as we could. And one of the classic examples of that in Scripture is King Saul. King Saul and how he views David. We've here in 1 Samuel just had the account of David and Goliath. Goliath is defeated. Goliath is killed. Israel chases away the Philistine army. David is put into the army. He begins to fight. He begins to lead other soldiers. And he's doing well. Israel is having victories. But then look starting in verse 6. 1 Samuel 18, starting in verse 6. "As they were coming home, when David returned from striking down the Philistine, the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing. to meet King Saul with tambourines, with songs of joy, and with musical instruments. And the women sang to one another as they celebrated, "Saul has struck down his thousands, and David his 10,000s." And Saul was very angry, and this saying displeased him. He said, "They have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed thousands. And what more can he have but the kingdom?" And David, or Saul eyed David from that day on. And then very quickly it goes downhill from there, where Saul begins to try to kill David in the next few verses. And then there's this conflict between them over several chapters where Saul grows more and more jealous of David. And when David eventually goes and hides, Saul is chasing him out into the wilderness, trying to catch David, trying to destroy David. Well, it starts with a jealousy over David getting more praise than Saul. And yet, think about two things with that. For one, did Saul get great praise? Right there, were they giving Saul great praise? Yeah, they were. To say Saul has killed his thousands, that is great praise. Yes, David's getting a better praise, but Saul actually was praised greatly. He receives a lot of honor, a lot of credit there. That's one thing to notice. And then the other thing to observe and notice is, who is Saul's real enemy? Who's the actual enemy that he should be fighting against here?
Jealousy.
What?
Jealousy.
Well, the sin of jealousy, yes. Yeah, that is one enemy that he should be fighting against. Sorry, I meant what human enemy? In other words, was David the actual real enemy? No, the Philistines are. So yes, the sin of jealousy on a spiritual side, but physically, the real enemy is the Philistines. They're the actual enemy. They're the opposing nation trying to come in and conquer Israel, raid on them, take from them, kill some of their soldiers, win the battles. That's the real enemy. And by God's grace and by God's help, David has actually been successful in fighting the real battle. That's why David is getting praised as well. David has also done well in fighting the Philistines. Saul and David are actually on the same side. They have the same enemy of the Philistines. And because David's done well, Israel has done well against the Philistines. Israel, the nation, has done well in winning the real victory. And yet Saul is jealous because he didn't get the same credit that David got. He got great praise. He got great credit for himself. He got more praise than anybody else besides David that we're told about. He got a very high praise and praising him, saying he's struck down his thousands. And yet he's jealous because someone else got more praise than him. He wants that praise for himself, but he also wants no one else to have it. That's the classic definition of jealousy. That's the exact thing that he's doing. And yet, if you think about this, as you read down through that story, Saul ends up neglecting the real battle. Saul ends up neglecting fighting the Philistines in order to chase David. He tries to kill David a couple times while he's in the palace. David runs away. David starts hiding in the wilderness and caves in different places. Saul sometimes takes the army and chases him, to the neglect of defending Israel against the Philistines. Saul ends up going and chasing David to the point where the Philistines actually come in and raid the land while he's not there. And so he's warned and he's told he needs to go, and when at times he's chasing David, what pulls him away is the Philistines have raided, he needs to turn back to try to defend the land again. Because of his jealousy, he misses the real battle. He misses the thing that he should be doing. Well, let's go to Romans 12. Romans chapter 12, we see envy, we see jealousy, envy being our desire to have something, very often our desire to have something that someone else has and we don't, our jealousy being our desire to have for ourselves something that we want to keep and let no one else have. But how do we actually deal with that? How do we fight against the real enemy of jealousy? Well, a few things that Bridges points out that we should keep in mind. For one, recognize the sovereignty of God and the goodness of God. And that's something we've come back to throughout this summer as we look at some of these different sins that Bridges talks about. Very often, one of the things that helps us is remember, God is sovereign. God is in control. And so when we look at our lives and we say, well, someone else has this that I want, whether it's the ability to do something and we're not that skilled, they do better at it than us, they have more money, they have more stuff in life, they get a position at work, they get a promotion that we want, whatever the case might be, We look and say, well, they have it and I don't have it. Burchett says we're doing one of two things. Either we're neglecting to view God at all, we're forgetting that God has placed us where he wants to place us, we're either neglecting God, or else we're saying God is unfair. We're saying God is unjust in what he's given to us, that God should have given us something better. Well, what we need to remember is God is sovereign. God's given us these things, and God is good. What God has given to us is good for us. He knows what's best. He knows what we should have. And so he is good in what he's given to us and also how much he's given to us. Because we might be envious someone else has something that we want, or you might be envious and jealous because they have more of it than we have or than we would want them to have. It's not just that God's put us in a position with what we have. He's chosen how much of it we should have as well. And when we remember that, when we look at it through the eyes of God's sovereignty, God's goodness, God's given us what's best for us, it can help us fight against being envious and jealous of what others have. A very similar idea is here in Romans 12. Another part that goes along with that is to honor and applaud those who are doing well, especially fellow believers. And certainly this can apply even with an unbeliever. Say an unbeliever at work gets promotion that we wanted. We can still applaud them. We can still honor them for that. We can still be respectful to them for that. But especially with fellow believers, we should honor them as they do well. Here in Romans 12, starting in verse 9, verses 9 and 10, it says, "Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good." Show them genuine love. Abhor what is evil, which can include envy and jealousy, because that is one of the works of the flesh in Galatians 5. Hold fast to what is good. Verse 10, love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Outdo one another in showing honor. Look to show so much honor to others that we're actually showing more honor than someone else. Some type of competition, some type of wanting to do better than someone else instead of trampling down on someone else to get a better position in life and outdo them in the job we have or the money we make or whatever, outdo one another in showing honor to them. And I think of Saul and David right there. Saul lost sight of the real battle. The real enemy is the Philistines. By God's grace, in God's sovereignty and God's goodness, God enables David to defeat Goliath. God enables David to be a good soldier who leads Israel in fighting against the Philistines and other enemies and doing well. That's a good thing when David and Saul are on the same side, and yet Saul neglects to show David that honor. Instead, he gets jealous, wanting more honor for himself. Contrast that with John 3. What does John the Baptist say in John 3:30? John the Baptist had many following him. Christ, in preparing the way for Christ, Christ comes on the scene, and people begin to follow after Christ. And some come to John and say, "Hey, some of your disciples are going and following Jesus now." But what does John say? He says, "He must increase, I must decrease." That's the total opposite view of Saul. And obviously, he's talking there about Jesus. People following Jesus is a very good thing. But there's not that jealousy. There's not that envy of John wanting the people who followed him to continue following him. He wants them to follow after Jesus. He's willing to give up the followers that he has so that people will follow Christ. And so here in Romans 12, there's that idea of showing honor to them. David could have done that. And then the other thing that Bridges points out is that when we get envious, when we get jealous, we can miss what God actually does want us to do. God has gifted us. God has put us in positions to serve him, to do things for him. If we focus our attention on other people, we're jealous and envious of them and what they have and what we don't have, we can miss where we actually can serve God. And again, for Saul, he gets pulled away from fighting the Philistines. He focuses so much attention on being jealous of David that he's chasing after David in the wilderness that the Philistines come in and raid the land. For us, as we might face that temptation to jealousy, we can face that temptation to being envious. What we should do is instead of turning our attention against those, especially fellow believers, especially those on our side in the big picture of life, if we're a believer and someone else is a believer, we're on the same side. We should both be wanting to serve God and honor God. If they're doing well, we should honor them for that, and we should look for how we can serve God and how we can do well. If we start turning our attention to those on our side and treating them as the enemy, we're going to be distracted from the real battle. We're going to be distracted from the real battle, and we're going to miss out on what God does have for us. And so we see the struggle with envy, we see the struggle with jealousy, and then that idea of rivalry that Galatians 5 talks about. And Bridges talks about this on a couple of sides. He talks about an extreme competitiveness, a competitiveness that wants to win at all costs, that always wants to win. And certainly when we play game, play sports, yeah, we want to win. We want to do well. We should seek to do our best, but yet we also need to learn to win well, and we need to learn to lose well. Because we don't win every time, we need to learn to lose well, but even when we do win, we should learn to win with the right attitude. And again, a very extreme example of being overly competitive to the point of going into other sins are the parents at their kid's baseball game who get into a fight because somebody makes a bad call. They're so competitive that they are selfishly, self-centeredly putting their own priorities ahead of everybody else, wanting what they want, even for their child, to the hurt of others. They're selfishly wanting to always win and win at all costs. And again, coming back to one of the other illustrations Bridges uses of a job, two employees working a job, one perhaps being jealous, envious because the boss seems to like the other guy better, and this guy wants the promotion, the boss likes the other guy better, he thinks the other guy will get it, and he wants to win at all costs, he wants to do better than that other guy, so he talks behind that guy's back. He talks poorly of him, he perhaps even lies about him to make himself look better and the other guy look worse so he can get the promotion he wants. One illustration, but in a lot of different ways, that type of rivalry, that type of wanting to win at all costs can lead to other sins. And so he talks about competitiveness. He also talks about a controlling attitude. Controlling attitude, not just wanting to win at all costs, that's more competitiveness, but a controlling attitude, always wanting to have our own way. If we turn to Philippians 2, we see a warning against this kind of mentality, against a mentality that always looks out for our own interests and always looks out to get what we want, and learns to look out for others. Philippians 2, probably familiar verses, but verses 3 and 4. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. That idea of selfish ambition, selfishly wanting what we want, looking out for our own interests at the expense of others. There's that on one hand, that's what we're warned against, and that can be that controlling attitude, always wanting to have our own way, regardless of the interests of others, we want to get what we want. We're warned against that, we're told to look out for others first, to put their interests ahead of our own. Now if we turn over to chapter 4, we see a very clear example of two people who haven't been doing this. And really, many conflicts come in the Christian life because two sinners selfishly went their own way. We're all sinners, and so when we interact with one another, if we have a conflict with someone else, very often that's because we both want our own way. And that's what's going on here in Philippians 4, verses 2 and 3. It says, I entreat Euodia and I entreat Syntyche to agree in the Lord. Yes, I ask you also, true companion, help these women who have labored side by side with me in the gospel, together with Clement, and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. So Paul's exhorting one there in Philippi to help these two ladies, but these two ladies have been disagreeing. They've been in conflict with one another. And he's urging them to agree together. They've been in conflict. They've had two different viewpoints, and both apparently want their own way. They're demanding that things be done their way. And he says, no, you should be agreeing together. Putting into practice what he had said back in chapter 2 about looking out for the interests of others instead of just ourselves. Well, that kind of controlling attitude, conflict comes when two sinners both want their own way. Very often that's at the root of a conflict. Well, when that wanting our own way becomes a very great habit of life, when we're in that habit of always demanding our own way, always wanting our own way, that's where it can become that controlling attitude. That with a particular person or with everybody in life, anytime we interact with that person or anytime we interact with anybody, we always want things to be our way. We always want people to give in to us. And Bridget points out a few ways that people go about that, ways that we can recognize this coming. He talks about a force of willpower. People just having the strong personality to push and to demand their own way and to press down on and mistreat even others who don't give them their way until other people give in. He talks about the force of willpower. He talks about anger. Anger when someone doesn't get their way, or anger even when they're questioned. And not even necessarily questioned to challenge them. Maybe someone asking a legitimate question, why are we doing it this way? Why is this the better way than this? And someone gets angry right in response. That can be a mark. That can be an indicator of a controlling spirit. Now, one other thing that he points out is manipulation. Manipulating people, pushing people, working them to give us what we want. When we see those types of things, someone using their willpower, just pressing down to always get their way, someone getting angry, someone manipulating people, very often that's that mark of a controlling spirit. Someone who always wants their own way, in opposition to Philippians 2, someone who is not looking out for the interest of others, just looking out for themselves. In Galatians 5, someone who has that sin of rivalries, always wanting to do better than someone else, always wanting to look better and get their own way. Well, if we turn back to Ephesians 5, finish up with this, the last passage that we'll look at. But here in Ephesians 5, we're given an antidote to that controlling spirit. One antidote, one thing we should do instead is what Philippians 2 says, put the interests of others ahead of ourselves. Not just looking out for ourselves, but looking out for others. But then here in Ephesians 5 as well, verse 21. Actually, let's read verse 20 as well, because it kind of leads into it, and again, remembering God's sovereignty. Verse 20, giving thanks always and for everything to God the Father. Always giving thanks for everything. If we're always giving thanks to God for everything he's given to us in his sovereignty and in his goodness, do we have a space to be jealous of someone else? Do we have a space to be envious because we don't have something that they have? We really don't. Do we have a space to have that competitiveness, wanting to win over someone else, and a rivalry, always wanting our own way? No, if we rest in God's goodness, God's control, that God gives us what's best, and he's done what's best for us, and he's given us what we have in life, if we rest in that, giving thanks to him, giving thanks to always for all things, that can help us fight against those sins of jealousy, of envy, of competitiveness, and of a controlling spirit. But then specifically on that idea of controlling, verse 21, submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ. Based on a relationship with Christ, out of reverence for him, submitting to one another. Not always demanding our own way, but submitting to others, looking out for their interests, honoring them, being respectful to them as well. And so we'll stop there for today. We see the struggle that we can have with envy, with jealousy. We see some of the things the Bible says about it that should help us with that. But any questions, any comments? Yes?
Will you please give the definition of envy?
Sure.
Thank you.
As he defined it, he says a painful and oftentimes resentful. Or I didn't know if you're writing down, so
yeah,
I'll go kind of stuff. Okay.
Okay.
Painful and oftentimes resentful awareness of an advantage enjoyed by someone else. It's painful, it's hard for us, it's difficult for us, and often we might resent them because we're aware they have some advantage that we don't have. So, good. Anything else? Well, I'll take your word for it because I'm headed that direction. So.